Apologize, just getting used to a new space. Some extra space was set up in the base medrash if anyone would like to relocate there. This year we have a phone hookup set up, so my wife asked me if there would be a 10 or 15 second delay in case I'd said anything I wish I didn't say. So I wish we could put that in force in the shul in general. Might be healthier for me. We find ourselves sitting again, another Tisha B'Av. It's always hard for me because I see people here who I don't see throughout the year. It's not appropriate to send greetings, but I do want to express that as challenging as it is for us to sit throughout the day and mourn the tragedies of the Jewish people, there's a certain amount of nechama, there's a certain amount of comfort that comes from us doing it together. And each and every one of us brings our own story and our own personality and our own life and our own challenges and difficulties and our own memories. And when we coalesce together as a people, as a nation, there is a sense of comfort, there's a sense of camaraderie, a sense of achdus that is so resonant and appropriate with the experience of Tisha B'Av. I do feel that I want to acknowledge the presence of Rabbi Penner, the Dean of Reitz, who I work with on a regular basis, and focus us all now on the experience of Tisha B'Av. I'd like to begin with the Gemara in Makos that we're all very familiar with, but I would like to focus on a different dimension of it as we open our thoughts for the day. The Gemara tells us that Shuv Pam Achas Hayolin LiYerushalayim, that there was a group of Tanoim that were making their way to Yerushalayim, Kevan Shehigiu LaHarat Sofim Karu Bigdeihem. And when they reached Harat Sofim, they tore their clothing, Kevan Shehigiu LaHarabayis. When they came to the Harabayis, Ra'u Shual Sheyotza Mibeis Kodesh Akdash, they saw that there was a fox emerging from the embers, from the destructed Kodesh Akdash. Hizchilu Hein Bochin, and they started to weep, they started to cry. Look at this destruction, look at the desolation, look at the devastation. Wild animals roaming the Makom HaMikdash. The Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva that was with them, we know, Mitzachek, he began to laugh. A laugh that reverberates throughout Jewish history, a laugh of hope, a laugh of aspiration, Amar Laem. So they asked Rabbi Akiva, Mibnei Ma Ato Mitzachek, why are you laughing? Omar Lahem, so Rabbi Akiva said to them, he answered the question, he's a rabbi after all, he answered the question with the question. Omar Lahem, Ibnei Ma'atem Bochim, why are you crying? Omar Lo, Makom Shekosuv Bov, Azara Korev Yumas. This is the space that HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed with so much sanctity, with so much holiness. This is the space that the Jewish people would come and experience the revealed presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There was a Kedusha, there was a holiness that was felt, not like today where we have to conjure a feeling of holiness and once in a while we can capture that spark, that sense of the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence, a Shmona Esrei here, a Ni'ilah there. But in all of the trials and travails of people's lives, there was a place they could go, and no matter how hard life got, no matter how challenging things were, and no matter how much joy one felt, there was a place one could go and experience in an empirical way the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if anybody who was foreign to that system, to that entity, would enter V'azor V'akores, most you must, that would the consequence would be lethal. So Amar Lahem Lachei Anani Mitzachik, that's exactly why I'm smiling. Tichsiv, because it says, Va'ido li edim ne'monim es uriya ha'kohen be'sacharya ben yivirchayahu, that I will summon trustworthy witnesses to testify for me, Uriah the Kohen, and Zechariah, v'chima inyan Uriah etzel Zechariah. What does Uriah have to do with Zechariah? Uriah b'mikdash rishon, Zechariah b'mikdash sheni. Uriah gave prophecy during the mikdash rishon, and Zechariah during the mikdash sheni. What are these two individuals? How are they giving testimony together? They lived in entirely separate eras of Jewish history. Says the Gemara, Ela tola hakosuv nivuoso shel Zechariah b'nivuoso shel Uriah. Rather, the Nevi'im are mentioning together because the Nevuah of Zechariah is dependent on the Nevuah of Uriah. Be'Uriah k'siv, what does it say with regards to Uriah? Lachem b'glalchom tzion sodeh t'choresh. That because of your actions, Yerushalayim will be plowed. It will be destroyed. Ooh, Zechariah k'siv, and in Zechariah it writes of the aspirations for rebuilding. Od yeshvu zekeinim v'zekeinos b'chovos Yerushalayim. The vision, not of these wild, eschatological, messianic, miraculous visions. A vision of a messianic time where life returns to what should be normal. This should not be normal. I remember that when we were struggling over the course of the year, as some of the terror attacks we would hear of them from Eretz Yisrael, and we would say Tehillim, and one of the questions that arose among many of the Rabbanim was whether or not to institute formally extra Tehillim, add to the Tfilos week after week. And this question was asked to some of the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, and the answer was haunting, the answer was horrific, the answer basically was that we shift the Tfilah when something extraordinary happens. And unfortunately, litzareinu, unfortunately the level that was going on at the time, that unfortunately is at the threshold of what is considered in the Middle East, what is considered in the land of Israel, relative to our historical experience to be, we can't even get the words out of our mouth, normal. Od yeshvu zekeinim v'zekeinos b'chovos ha'ir. Our ambition, our hope for rebuilding, for Mashiach, for a world of Geula, is a world of real normalcy, where people can sit and be in safety, where old men and old women and children can play in the streets, where no one has to walk down King George and turn around to look at who's behind them, where no one has to walk into the old city and fear, is the person behind the cart selling baguettes, is that somebody that I have to worry about? That's all we want. We want the opportunity to live in normalcy. So says Rabbi Akiva, Ad shelo niskayim nevuah shel Uriah ha'yisim misyarei shelo niskayim nevuah shel Zechariah. As long as the prophecy of Uriah wasn't fulfilled, the prophecy of destruction, I was worried there wouldn't be a prophecy of Zechariah. Achshav shetiskayim nevuah shel Uriah. Now that the prophecy of Uriah has been fulfilled, b'yadua shenivuaso shel Zechariah. Now I know that there will be ultimately a prophecy of Zechariah. And generally the dimension of this Gemara that we focus on is Rabbi Akiva's extraordinary capacity for hope, for a belief, for his positivity, for his sense that the world can be better. To be able to look at the tragedy and trauma of all of Jewish history, encapsulated in those embers of the burning Beis HaMikdash, and see the Nevuah of Zechariah, and see a bench with old people just sitting, feeding the birds, enjoying life. That sense of positivity, that sense of hope, that sense of aspiration that Rabbi Akiva can hold on to. But I'd like to focus this morning on a different aspect of this Gemara. An aspect that sometimes we overlook because we're so overwhelmed with Rabbi Akiva's optimism. And that is the notion of Tola Nevuaso Shel Zechariah B'Nevuaso Shel Uri. That the Nevuah of Zechariah is Tola, that means it's dependent on the Nevuah of Uri. That means that yes, we hope and we wish and we pray for a day where there will be peace, there'll be shalom, there'll be a sense of happiness, a sense of serenity and ability to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. But Tola Nevuaso Shel Zechariah B'Nevuaso Shel Uriah, it doesn't come free. It is Tola, it's dependent, it requires our passing through these eras of Jewish history of tremendous Tisha B'Av. And I have to say, that's not very funny. Even if you want to be hopeful, even if you want to be positive, even if you want to be the optimist, that's not so funny. Tola nivuaso shel Zechariah b'nivuaso shel Uriah. That we have to give up our homes, our land, our children, our families, our sense of safety and security. How many korbanos throughout Jewish history, Tola Nevuaso Shel Zechariah, just so we could put those two old people on that bench in Yerushalayim? Just so that we could create a society and an opportunity to live with a sense of security? Tola Nevuaso Shel Zechariah B'Nevuaso Shel Uriah. What does that mean? What does that mean for Jewish history? That it's not just that we look at the bad things that happen and say, don't worry, one day things will be better. That's optimism. But we look at the bad things that happen and we say, this is necessary. This is the foundation. This is something that must happen. So Rav Soloveitchik, in his work, a work that was published called Out of the Whirlwind. I don't understand most of this book. I feel like there's a foundation that's been created exclusively devoted to making Rabbi Soloveitchik incomprehensible. But this passage I do understand from the book. And the Rav says something so beautiful. He says that faith is a passional experience and experience of suffering. From the very dawn of our history with the emergence of Abraham, suffering was considered both the main challenge which the covenantal community was expected to meet heroically and the great means of realizing the meta-historical destiny of this community. That challenge, that suffering is not just something that we endure. It's not just something that we deal with. It's something that shapes us. Abraham, as the incarnation of the knighthood of faith, was a great sufferer, a martyr. His greatness is manifested through his superhuman capacity for endurance and acceptance of sorrow. As a matter of fact, the elation, the election of his seed as a covenantal community was to be realized through suffering. And that's what the Psukim tell us when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Abraham. Vayomer la'Avram yodoa teida ki ger yeh zaracha be'eretz lo lo'em v'avadum v'inu li'olam osam arba me'ot shana ve'achrei chen yotzu b'rechush gadol. The realization that the bris, the covenant with the Ribbono Shel Olam, is only possible if the people are tested in the crucible of affliction. That suffering, that pain, that the Nevuah of Uriah, that the destruction of the Mikdash and of so many lives and of so many communities and of so many people, this is not just something that we gather today to reflect on because it is something that we went through and we want to remember it. Tisha B'Av is not a memorial. We don't make a Kel Molei Rachamim on Tisha B'Av. In fact, yesterday we wouldn't even make a Kel Rachamim the day before Tisha B'Av. It's not just a day of memory, it's a day to internalize the challenges and difficulties of the Jewish people, because it is through those challenges that we become who we are. And that is true for so many of us as individuals as well. That who we are is such a strong outcome and outgrowth of the way in which we face and confront our most formidable challenges of life. And Tisha B'Av is a day to concentrate those challenges into a singular experience of reflection and tefillah and devotion and communal gathering. It's a day where we affirm and we recognize the role that those tragedies play in making Klal Yisrael who they are. The Rav continues that the basic tendency in man is to avoid the painful and search for the pleasant. And that belongs to the original scheme of creation and is implanted in man and animal alike. This is so true about our generation. That man has a search for happiness. We want to be happy. We want things to be good. The whole world today is structured, every challenge that we have as a community relative to the outside world has to do with the fact that we are trying to thrive in a culture that believes that anyone could do anything as long as it makes them happy. That's the goal of life. To live a life free of pain, free of guilt, free of any sort of structure or expectation. That if my phone tells me that chasing little imaginary people is making me happy, then that's what I'm going to do. I might walk into the street and get hit by a bus. It was worth it. I caught the pokey. I find myself sitting in totally inappropriate places, in a Holocaust museum, in a concentration camp, in someone else's backyard. I'm pursuing my happiness on my phone, in my own little virtual reality. I am walking around the world chasing that which makes me happy. And this is the challenge that we have. The lack of understanding comes up all the time, all the time. In issues when we have end-of-life issues in halacha, and people look at you and they're like, why does the halacha demand certain things? Don't we just want people to be happy, to be pain-free, to be... Of course we do. Of course that's a focus and a priority. But we have values that transcend just feeling good. And I want to tell you something. This country used to have values that transcend just feeling good. There was a whole generation that even though they just got married, even though they just had their first kid, even though they just scored their first job and everything was wonderful, when the country was attacked or when something needed to be done, they grabbed their weapons and they went to war. That didn't make them happy. It made them a life of meaning. That didn't give them joy and pleasure. And today we look around and we struggle because this has become the central motivation of the human being, that we need to be satisfied. And every challenge we have needs to be resolved in a way that makes me happy. It's why it's almost impossible to educate and inspire youth, because we need to deliver things to them that are not always so pleasurable, that are not always so fun, that are not always so exciting. And that has to be part of life too. And that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying, Tala nevuaso shel Zechariah benevuaso shel Uriah. That the challenges of life are part of what shape us, are part of what make us who we are part of what give us a sense of meaning and a sense of purpose. And in many ways, that's what Tisha B'Av is about. Tisha B'Av is about descending into the abyss. Tisha B'Av is about looking at all of the holocausts and the pogroms and the churbanos and all of the kedoshim and all of the people who have sacrificed themselves and concentrating it into one day and hitting rock bottom, hitting the nevuah of Uriah. That Yerushalayim wasn't just destroyed. Techaresh means it was plowed. You know what plowing means? You go under the ground. It was uprooted under the ground. And that's the experience of Klal Yisrael. The Tisha B'Av is about hitting rock bottom of Jewish history and realizing at that bottom, in that darkness, the capacity and the inner strength that exists within us, that we can summon from within ourselves to ultimately emerge as stronger, to ultimately emerge with a sense of meaning, with a sense of purpose, internalizing the experiences of Jewish history. And that's when you could reach the laugh of Rabbi Akiva. The laugh of Rabbi Akiva is not just refocusing yourself from the nevuah of Uriah to the nevuah of Zechariah. It's using the nevuahs of Uriah to reach the nevuahs of Zechariah. It's extending the trauma of tragedy as a platform for growth that ultimately culminates with a stronger and more powerful and more sanctified human being. And that's why it says, "Kol misabel al Yerushalayim zocha v'roeb," that anybody who is misabel, anybody who mourns Yerushalayim, zocha v'roeb b'simchaso, will merit in order to experience it in his joy. That it doesn't talk about it in a lashon of asid. It's not that anybody who's misabel Yerushalayim will one day merit in his joy. That's not the pshat, says the Chasam Sofer. It's not that if we do a good job on Tisha B'Av, then when Mashiach comes, we'll be first there. We'll be, you know, with all the parades and the excitement and the band and everything will be amazing. It means that zoche v'roeh, it means that right now you're being zoche, right now. Because it's in descending to that world that we could find meaning and purpose, that we could transform ourselves, and that we could ultimately emerge with a stronger Jewish people. Anne Frank was born in Frankfurt. She lived much of her life in Amsterdam, and her family had moved there in the 1930s in order to escape the rising influence and the rising terror that they ultimately felt was coming by the Germans, by Hitler, by the Nazis. And by 1940, they found themselves trapped in Amsterdam by the German invasion. And in July 1942, the family goes into hiding. We have, as many of you know, a diary. A diary that was given to Anne Frank on her 13th birthday. And that diary she recorded in the first entry, June 12, 1942, and the final entry, August 1, 1945. And it chronicles the journey of a child, of an adolescent, in confronting and dealing with the realities of trauma and tragedy of life. It tells of the experiences as they are processed by a young person, a person who is full of life and idealism and hope, a person who was full of aspiration and dreams for the future. And in this diary where she discusses each and every day, in the entry of May 3rd, 1944, she writes the following: "I don't believe that big men, the politicians and the capitalists alone, are guilty of the war. Oh no, little man is just as guilty. Otherwise, the peoples of the world would have risen in revolt long ago. There is in people simply an urge to destroy, to kill, to murder, to rage. And until all mankind, without exception, undergoes a great change, war will be waged. Everything that has been built up, cultivated, and grown will be destroyed and disfigured. After which mankind will have to begin all over again." This entry reminded me of a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. I'm learning Yirmiyahu with my daughter Rina. She's mostly learning Yirmiyahu. I'm trying to pretend that I've learned this before. And the pasuk tells us in the middle of the first parak, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yirmiyahu and he says to him, "Re'eh ivkadeticha hayom azeh al agoyim v'al hamamlochos," "I have appointed you this day on the nations, on the kingdoms, lintosh v'lintos, ulahavid ulaharos, to uproot, to destroy, to be a prophet of doom. Livnos velin toa. But not only to be a prophet of doom, ultimately to bring the Jewish people to a place where they could plant and they could build. And that is the world of Rabbi Akiva. That is the laugh of Rabbi Akiva. The ability to see in the darkness the capacity to achieve extraordinary things. As I mentioned on Shabbos a couple of weeks ago, a number of us spent some time at a conference in the end of July. And at this conference, present was one of the heroes of the Jewish people that we're all familiar with. That is Racheli Frankel. Racheli Frankel is the mother of Naftali Frankel. In 2014, we all went through what is just described as an unforgettable and extraordinary, tragic yet transformative summer. When we woke up to the news that three young boys had been abducted as they tried to make their way home from yeshiva, and that these boys had rallied an entire nation. It didn't matter if you were Haredi, if you were Dati Lumi, if you were secular, if you were Reform, conservative, Orthodox. For 18 days, it didn't matter who you were. A Jew was a Jew was a Jew. And these three boys became the children of the Jewish people. As everyone, Mit'avad, Narvad, Zaked, everybody found a space, found an opportunity to express their sense of tefillah, their sense of hope, their sense of prayer for their return. And we all follow the extraordinary courage, in particular of their mothers, as they went to the United Nations to try to evoke some shemet, some molecule of compassion from that body. Some brief moment of pause from its anti-Semitic, anti-Israel disposition to just look at a group of mothers praying for the return of their children. And how they literally became individuals who embodied Am Yisrael. And there was a palpable sense of unity and purpose to the Jewish people. We had found something, and of course it was tragic. But we had finally found something we could all agree on. We could all invest in, we could all wake up in the morning and say, we share this right here, this is the Jewish people. And we know that, of course, this story ended in great tragedy. When Racheli Frankel was at this conference and she spoke in front of the group, she told of the fact that it was a very hectic and challenging thing for your whole family to be thrown onto the international stage when you're going through something that's so personal, that's so challenging, that's so difficult for yourself. And so one of the times of the day that she would always consecrate to be with her own children, we had the opportunity to meet two of her children. They came with her. The only time she had the chance to be with her own, she was always makpid at the time of Kriya Shema Lamita, as they went to sleep. And as darkness descended on the home, to be able to sit with her children and give them a sense of chizuk, give them a sense of strength. As we're all familiar, the group at the Kotel that saw her approaching to the Kotel, who were davening for her son, and they said to her, give us some chizuk, we're davening. And she looked at the group and she said to them, don't forget, God doesn't work for us, we work for Him. A sense of emunah, of faith, of unshakable bitachon in the Ribbono Shel Olam under the most trying of circumstances. And she told us that after it was discovered that her son had been murdered, that they continued this nightly ritual with her children, and that she listened to her children as they read the words of Kriya Shema Alamita. Except the children had added a phrase to the Kriya Shema. We all know that when you reach the point in Kriya Shema Alamita, you recite, and of course it's a very popular song, B'Shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael. In the name of Hashem, the God of the Jewish people, Mimini Michael. Umismoli Gavriel in the tefillah goes on to say, I'm surrounded. I'm surrounded by angels of protection. I'm surrounded by angelic beings who are there to hold me, to protect me, to nourish me. Except her children added a new angel. Mimini Michael, Umismoli Gavriel, Umulefanai Uriel, Umeachorai Rifael, Naphtali Mistakel, Ve'al Roshi Shchinaseh. That's what Galus is about. It's a process by which we add new angels to the Jewish people. It's not for any of us to say that anything is ever worth it in the world of trauma, in the world of tragedy. But the emuna, the faith that we saw, the heroes that emerged, the angels that exist in Klal Yisrael, this is part of the evolution of our people. We don't understand why. But it's not something we fight, and it's not something we deny, and it's not something we put into a box and go for therapy for so we can go back into the world and just enjoy ourselves all the time. It's something we hold on to in a healthy way, and we process it spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, and we take it with us. We don't encapsulate it and try to stay away from it. Tala nevuaso shel Zechariah b'nevuaso shel Uri. That nevuah that came from the mouths of children, the perspective that their brother sits above them now is one of the angels to protect them. And she said that the children had the idea that since you say this three times, they repeat it, and in each time they add the other Gilad and Ayal, they add all three of the boys. And this is their family ritual, and I guarantee you they're not doing it crying. They're a happy family. They're at least they present outwardly. They smile. Children smile. They went to Disney World. They're normal, regular kids whose lives were turned upside down. And instead of sitting and watching the fox walk out of the Kodesh Akdash and beginning to cry, Tala nevuaso shel Zechariah b'nevuaso shel Uriah. They created a new nevuah, they created a new prophecy. A prophecy of hope and a prophecy of angels. Torah tells us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Ha'aretz Ha'isa Tov V'Vov V'Choshech Al Pnei Sehom, that there is darkness in the world. V'Yomer Elokim Yehi Or. That's our job. Our job is to find the light in this world. First kino that we're going to recite begins with the word Shavas. Kino number 6. Her of Soloveitchik would always emphasize the sense of shock that came in the Churban. The sense of, I didn't see this coming. And that shock emanated from the fact that the Jewish people, even though they had so many indications and so many prophecies that this ultimately would unfold, they allowed themselves not to internalize these messages. And they created barriers between themselves and those that were trying to inspire them and motivate them. Barriers of disbelief and barriers of cynicism, poking fun at Nevi'im. What did they know? What could they possibly present? And Shabbos, as the Pasuk says, with regarding the creation of the world, with Shabbos, Vayishbos, Vayom HaShvi'i. The Torah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested on the seventh day, and Rashi, quoting the Medrash, asks, what do you mean he rested on the seventh day? The seventh day, you have to stop working already, Vayichal Elohim Vayom HaShvi'i, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu finished creating the world on the seventh day. How could you finish creating on the seventh day? You have to finish creating on the sixth day. It's hard to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, you know, creeping into the 18 minutes, being yelled at by his feminine side. Right? What does that mean? That he stopped creating the world on the seventh day. You can't stop creating the world on the seventh day. It's Shabbos already. So the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Rashi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew the exact starting time of Shabbos, Kichut Asayra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have 18 minutes, he didn't have Bein HaShmashos, he didn't have any of these other types of times. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew precisely when Shabbos begins. Exactly. We have some people in the shul who know that too. Exactly when Shabbos begins, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew. So what it means to be Shabbos, what it means to stop, is it means that Shabbos comes in an instant. It means that Churban, when it finally arrived, was so overwhelming. In May 1981, a group of young American Jewish leaders met with Prime Minister Begin. And they asked Begin, as we know, was one of the prime ministers of Israel, who had a real feel and a real sense of historical consciousness of the Jewish people. He carried with him to every speech and to every meeting and to every confrontation, sometimes to his detriment, the haunting images of his family that perished in the Holocaust, the trauma of his own battle in the early days of the state in the Irgun. And he felt on his shoulders the responsibility not only of a nation, not only of a group of people living in a land, but he felt on his shoulders the responsibility of Jewish history. In negotiating once with an American United States president for an arms deal that Israel needed for its safety and security, he made them remove a paragraph that said that United States recognized Israel's right to exist. And the president said to Menachem Begin, what do you mean? That's a great paragraph. You wish you had that paragraph from how many people? This will tell everyone in the world, we believe in your right to exist. And Menachem Begin looked him in the eye and he said to him, I don't need you to tell me I have a right to exist. I have that right from time immemorial. I have that right from Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, and my ancestors were in this land. This land is ours. We don't even need the greatest superpower in the world to tell us we have a right to be here. Now sell us the planes. So they asked Menachem Begin what he thought were the lessons of the Holocaust. And he answered, the first and most important lesson of the Holocaust is that if an enemy of our people says he seeks to destroy us, believe him. And this is a lesson that echoes throughout Jewish history. This is a lesson that we're struggling with today. Menachem Begin was the prime minister in Israel who ultimately made the decision to bomb the reactor in Iraq, for which Israel was condemned. Condemned by the United Nations, condemned and punished by the United States for preventing Iraq from becoming nuclear, and he couldn't care less about world opinion, even in the face of opposition within his own government. Why didn't he care? Because once the leaders of Iraq said they were determined to destroy the state of Israel, that's it. You believe them. It'll happen. There is no Shavas. There is no resting. There is no complacency. There is no regressing into a sense of comfort that maybe things will be okay. There is a commitment and a recognition that Klal Yisrael is pursued. And so therefore, Shabbos, therefore when the Korban finally comes, it almost feels like it wasn't real, like it wasn't going to happen, even though all the signs were there. The Kina talks about Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the compassion to send out of Yerushalayim on a mission while the Churban occurred so that he wouldn't actually see it. And the way in which Yirmiyahu HaNavi knew that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was because when he looked over the horizon, as long as the Beis HaMikdash stood, there was a column of smoke that miraculously always went straight up to Shamayim. And when he looked over the horizon, he saw from afar that there was no longer a column of smoke. What was so significant? What's so powerful about this column of smoke? Why is this such an important miracle? Beis HaMikdash had so many miracles. Each miracle was saturated with meaning and messages and ideas for Klal Yisrael to internalize. What does that mean? So the miracle of the smoke, the miracle of the Ashan, was that the smoke would go straight up to Shamayim. And it didn't matter how windy it was. Remember, there used to be something called wind. Cool breeze, right? Didn't matter how windy it was. Didn't matter if there was a storm. It didn't matter if birds were flying over. The smoke went straight up to Shamayim. Because that was the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was a place that you could reach a conduit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu despite anything going on. We all have experiences in life where we find ourselves engaged and connected to tefillah, to mitzvos, to Torah. And then things happen, distractions, just our own, we run out of gas. And all of a sudden we feel like it's not there. There are things going on in life, there are things happening. It's too hot, it's too difficult, it's too boring, it's too this, it's too that. Things happen that shift the smoke. We all stand on the Ilah, and the smoke's going straight up. We feel it, we're there, we're present, we're davening, we're yelling, we're singing, we're there. Psach lanu sha'ar, it goes straight up. And then there are moments where the winds of challenge and distraction blow, and that smoke is all over the place. Maybe a rifa'enu here, a baruch aleinu there, a little tehillim for a sick person over there. But it's hard, it's so hard to keep that sense of connection solid. That's what the Beis HaMikdash was. It was a sense of consistency. It was a place that you could always come home. It was a place that when you walked in, you felt a sense of embrace. You felt that the connection could happen right then and there. If you did what you had to do, and you approached the Beis HaMikdash, your connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu just went straight up, and everything else fell away. And that's such a void in our life. It's such a loneliness in our life. Have you ever had a bad Yom Kippur? A Yom Kippur where you did everything right to prepare. You went to the Shabbat Shuvah Drasha. You went, you ate Chol of Yisrael. You ate those, you know, they were probably Oreo cookies, but they said Yitzi's cookies on them. So, you know, you ate Pas Yisrael. And you did everything you were supposed to do. You went to the mikvah and you put on the kittel and you show up in shul and you're trying so hard, but whatever it is. Sometimes there's something going on, but that's not even the worst ones. The worst ones is where there's nothing going on. No one's sick, no one's upset, no one's in danger, no one's traumatized. You're just not there. You're just not there. And you feel like everyone around you is telling you, this is it, this is your opportunity. Mi yichye, mi yamos. And you're trying so hard. And the more you try, the worse it gets. The more you push, the more you say, I have to do this, the more pressure you create around yourself, the worse it gets, the harder it gets. Everybody's had these experiences. Everybody goes through this. Everybody has a challenge. Everybody, that's what it means to be in Golus. That's what it means to have barriers between us and the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what the Beis HaMikdash was. See, if we begin with the premise that the goal of our life is not just to feel good, but the goal of our life is to have meaning and purpose, to accomplish things, to be an Eved Hashem, then we recognize how far and distant we are from that feeling, from that presence. Or maybe it's in trying to convey this to a child. Trying to tell a child who looks at you and they're like, you know that on Shabbos, we were talking about the halachos of Tisha B'Av, or at the Shabbos table. A very beautiful Shal Shudis. We had a lot of singing. And I said to my seven-year-old, Meira, I said to her, hopefully my wife's not online yet. I said to her, she asked me, she said, "What, you know, what are the things we're not allowed to do?" So I said, you know, one of the things we're not allowed to do on Tisha B'Av is we're not allowed to study Torah. She said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, you're not allowed to study Torah." She said, "Not allowed to study any Torah?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "So why do you talk so long?" So I said to her, "There are certain things that you're allowed to study. You're allowed to study sad things from the Torah." And she laughed at me. And she said, "Abba, there's nothing sad in the Torah. There's nothing sad in the Torah. Because when you're 7 years old, all you've been shown is all the beautiful projects, all the beautiful Noach Tevas. No one told you about the hand getting bitten off, the world being destroyed and decimated. Everything is wonderful. Jewish people get the Torah, no mountain hanging over their head. Everybody goes into Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim was a little bit of a challenge, but it happens in the summer, so we'll let the camp deal with that. And that's it. We create this beautiful, wonderful, energetic, fantastic, amazing, amazing experience. And then they get older and we have to start showing them it's not all so easy, it's not all so simple. And they look at us and they say, "But so why would I want to do this? Why should I do this? Why should I filter what I see online? And why should I not just watch TV all day? And why should I not be online all the time? And why should I not go where I want to go and see who I want to see and eat what I want to eat and listen to the music I want to listen? Why should I give all that up? It seems great. And we say to them, "I'll tell you why. Because we have something much greater. We're the Am Segula. It's amazing. It's incredible. We're Am Yisrael. It's tremendous. It's such a privilege. It's such..." And they look at you with this blank stare and they're like, I don't feel it. And we feel we're at such a loss. What do we do? How do we give this over? What book has been written? None. What experience can we add them that gives them that sense, that instills within them that feeling, that emotion, that connection to God, that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We can barely hold on to it ourselves. And here we're supposed to take an adolescent or a 15-year-old and instill within them a feeling that even though you can't do everything you want to do and the world is having a blast and everybody's going crazy and everything's wonderful and there's total unrestrained in pursuit of happiness, you're on a greater path. Here, come, let me bring you to the Kotel. Let me bring you to Israel. Let me show you. And the kid's like, the toilet doesn't even flush all the way. Like, what are you doing to me? Let me bring you to beautiful Eretz Yisrael. Just don't drink the water, you'll die of... Let me bring you to Eretz. Let me give you an inspirational experience. Come with me to a shir. This rabbi, he's really... Come with me to... Man, the kid's like, what do you want? That's the Beis HaMikdash. It's the Beis HaMikdash. 3 times a year, we brought everyone. This wasn't just like, the men, they say that when men have their first child, that's when their commitment to Ma'ariv gets very, very strong. Can you help now? Ma'ariv! Did you daven Ma'ariv earlier? Ma'ariv. Maybe they need me for a minyan Ma'ariv. It's hard. It's really hard. 3 times a year, we brought everyone to the Beis HaMikdash. We brought everyone home. So men and women and children and even little babies could feel that sense of connection and that sense of presence of the Ribono Shel Olam. Continue with Kina Vav. Shavasuro Menishmuni Archim.